Everybody's favorite time. Absolutely.
Can't Welcome, everyone, to After Raw Radio with your hosts, Big Danny Bennett and myself,
yep.
Armesco. This was a tough week for wrestling fans. As you probably saw at the beginning of Raw tonight, there was a graphic for the late Joni Lauer, better known in her Attitude Era days as Chyna, and passed away this week. It's rough.
Yeah. So, I mean, pretty much unexpectedly. And it was, especially.
Was it really unexpected?
I mean, I would say so, based off of everything that she had been doing this last year or so. Cause, you know, she left the adult industry. She moved over to Japan, was teaching English. She was doing her weekly YouTube videos. Everything seemed like it was all right. But I mean, you know, eventually those past demons just have a way of catching back up to you.
Yeah. That last YouTube video that she posted before she passed away was a telltale sign that all was not right in Chynaville. And, whenever I, read the report, I was online working around like 2 a.m. when it broke. That they had found her body. And it was, I was very sad as a wrestling fan and somebody who loved her work when she was in her prime. But as a realist, I was like, oh, well, surprise. Like, it's like if Jake the Snake Roberts would have died 4 years ago, would you have been like, oh no, Jake the Snake Roberts died? You've probably been like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, that's something that you would have seen coming.
Very, very sad though. Very disappointing. I do agree though that it did sound and kind of feel like within the next few years she might have been able to get back into, the graces of WWE. I think the problem WWE always had with that though is exactly what you're going to be seeing from Vivid Entertainment now that she's passed away. They're going to capitalize on that. Kind of like how when, Samoa Joe went over to NXT, TNA released, the best of Samoa Joe, things like that. Companies want to make money. And with her death, Vivid is going to release everything that they had in their vault or the best of Chyna, whatever you want to call it. And it's going to be just, a shit show. And I think WWE always had that latent fear that the minute they brought her back or they inducted her into the Hall of Fame, that Vivid would take that opportunity to say, oh, here's our backlog of everything we filmed with her.
Right.
Here you go. And it would, put a pretty bad light on the company. So the big question is, what does the Hall of Fame look like with Chyna in it? Or is there a Hall of Fame where she ever gets in? I think that's honestly one of the hardest questions that anybody that would be on the committee to choose members of the Hall of Fame would have to answer. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, she was such a pivotal character in not just the Attitude Era, but in overall wrestling history. I mean, first woman in the Royal Rumble, first woman to hold a men's title. Like she part of one of the most popular factions of all time. But then you have the personal stuff outside, and it's like, it's such a fine line that they have to toe of bringing her in. Like, I honestly think that making a decision on inducting Chyna is much harder for them than making a decision on inducting a Chris Benoit.
I think they both have a lot of the same similarities. I think Jim Ross put it best though, where he said, if you were to ask Chris, when Chris was in his sane mind, if you were to ask Chris, hey, this is what the future is going to look like. Would you want yourself inducted? Chris Benoit would say absolutely not. Like, I would not want myself inducted. I think China's a somewhat different case. The, you know, the story around her exit from WWE is well publicized. She was, you know, formerly dating Paul Levesque, Triple H. They broke up, and he immediately began dating Stephanie McMahon, which was at the time pretty hush-hush. Then eventually erupted into a storyline, which is one of the most popular storylines in wrestling history, which created just numerous offshoots and very, very entertaining. But they eventually got married in real life, and China was extremely bitter about that. She accused Stephanie McMahon of stealing Triple H away, and accused Triple H of cheating, and last year accused Triple H of physical and mental abuse while they were dating, and all sorts of just very, very difficult barriers to getting her in there. Then to compound that, the adult film industry videos and the drunken tirades on YouTube. I think a lot of people right now are mourning for China from 10, 12 years ago. And a lot of people are just very sad at what she had become recently and where she, how she passed away. I think, though, very, very classy move by WWE putting the graphic up and then doing a little tribute to her at the halfway point of the show. I don't think her contribution can be ever diminished. I think she'll be in the Hall of Fame somewhere down the line. I think that if that whole thing with Stephanie McMahon and Triple H doesn't happen, a lot of people say, you know, Trish Stratus, she was the greatest diva of all time, or Lita, she was the greatest diva of all time. I think if that tumultuous relationship isn't there, very often people would have referred to China as the greatest diva of all time. And I think she probably would have been inducted into the Hall of Fame where Trish was, and then, you know, everything would drop down like by a year. Then you'd see Trish the next year, Lita the next year. And I just I don't know what to make of the situation. I think I don't know when the right time is. That's the problem. Will there ever be a right time is the question you have to ask yourself.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a right time, but it like I said, it's one of those things where you're like, okay, what she did, it can't go unnoticed. You know what I mean? And
no,
the whole
right.
And you know, and a lot of WWE's reasoning before was, you know, kids are going to Google search her name and you know, and they're going to see her and whatever. And you're like, okay, well, she's on the network anyway. Chris Benoit's on the network anyway. You know, these people are on there. Kerry Von Erich is on the WWE network. You know, these people that have committed these have different acts. Like you can't just erase them from history. Now, like Jim Ross said, what China did, you know, being the adult industry, it's not like it's an entirely deplorable act like, you know, some other people have committed. You know, that's
her
business.
I mean, look
at
like Abdullah the Butcher. That's, you know, Jim Cornette is very critical of Abdullah the Butcher being in the WWE Hall of Fame from the perspective of Abdullah wrestling with hepatitis C, constantly blading, forking, which is the term that they use. Abdul always brought a fork and he would blade with a fork. And, you know, passing on that disease to other people. And,
right.
You know, but Abdullah is in the Hall of Fame. And you look at Jake Snake Roberts with his years of drug and alcohol abuse and discussing in movies Beyond the Mat, you know, about using heroin and about doing cocaine and abandoning his family and whatnot. Jake the Snake proved he could change and earn his spot into the Hall of Fame. I shouldn't say earn because he belonged in there, but
right.
The WWE has a longstanding tradition of being terrified of bringing these people in when they have these offenses. Like you're saying about the Von Erichs. You can Google that the Von Erichs, their family is so laced with suicide, with people just killing themselves because, you know, depression, childhood trauma, pressure from their father. The list is immeasurable for people that have left this world that are wrestlers you know, so I don't know. I know she belongs in there. I think we all know she belongs in there. I think she belongs in there with a bullet. I think, honestly, China, her contributions to women's wrestling are more so than any other woman's in the last 25 years. I think that she broke every barrier possible, and she belongs in there. I just don't know if there is ever a right time to bring her in there.
Well, not only that, you know, who would induct her and different things like that? You know, it's, I mean, look at Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan's the biggest name ever in wrestling. And he's not acknowledged as being in part of the Hall of Fame anymore. Like, that's how afraid WWE is to tarnish any sort of image with any sort of controversy. You know, it's one of those things where you're like, maybe she never gets in. She deserves it, but that doesn't mean that she'll get in.
No, you're right. I mean, that's, you know, when you have Steve Austin tweeting, she was as over as a wrestler could ever be.
Yeah.
I don't think people now that look back and watch this, they don't understand, like, just how over China was. Like,
she was insanely over. Absolutely.
She wasn't just insanely over. She was like, she was a workhorse. There was talk about having her win the World Heavyweight Championship, like,
yep,
of her being the first woman to become a World Heavyweight Champion, not the Divas Champion or the Women's Champion, but literally becoming. And of course, those reports have been corroborated and then unsubstantiated and then corroborated and then unsubstantiated. So you don't know necessarily how true they are. But I mean, it's not hard for me to believe, considering they had her enter the Royal Rumble, eliminate Mark Henry, you know, win the Intercontinental Championship off of who? Who was it?
Jeff Jarrett.
Jeff Jarrett, you know, co-share that honor, and then go through this huge, you know, massive angle with Eddie Guerrero that was like a main event level storyline. And there was so much, so much to what she did.
And remember her. One of her biggest feuds was with the debuting Chris Jericho.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's one of the nuts thing. Is when they talked to Chris Jericho about it, he said when he initially came in, WWE audiences didn't really know what to make of him, but he got over because of China.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's insane to me. And, you know, her matchup with Ivory at WrestleMania and just the whole litany of reasons why she was so good at what she did. Just very, very good in the ring. Excellent, excellent ring. And her presence was how you talk about, like, you know, guys like Batista when you're talking about men's wrestling, or, you know, like, just these huge physical presence that existed out there. You know, she was a woman that was over 6 feet tall, that was just built, that, you know, after a few plastic surgeries, and I'm not saying plastic surgery makes you beautiful, but, you know, she's one of those people where she went on record saying, like, she was finally going to look the way she always wanted to look. And in her prime, you know, was a gorgeous, sculpted, talented, incredibly marketable woman. You know, she was in Playboy, and that was huge back then as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sable was in it. Sable, Tori Wilson, China.
Yep.
I mean, Maryse, well, that was before, but.
Just, I mean, you know, and we're sorry we're kind of talking about this a little bit more than we are about Raw, but because, by the way, Raw was a great show tonight.
Raw was phenomenal.
You know, it's just, it's odd for me to have this, like, you know, as you get older, your heroes die, the people you looked up to die, the people you watched die. No, and no other sport is that as prevalent as wrestling, which never stops breaking your heart. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, Jim Ross was talking about it. There's been a few articles about it, like why WWE needs an off season, why WWE needs, you know, to be like maybe 9 or 10 months out of the year, with those other 2 months being filled by something like NXT, or, you know, at least not a touring brand. Maybe it does like WWE Raw and SmackDown in a pay-per-view once a month and gives its employees, you know, 5 days off a week to get their bodies right. But a lot of these people, they turn to drugs and alcohol as their medication. So when you're taking bumps, you know, 300 nights a year, and your body is broken and you become addicted to painkillers, you become addicted to alcohol, you become addicted to anything that numbs you to the process, I mean, there's nothing you can do. That's just what your life becomes. And you eventually get swallowed up by it. And you saw, you know, Chris Benoit is a tremendous example of a surefire Hall of Fame career where the man will never be in the Hall of Fame. The man will never, ever be remembered for anything but killing his family, despite being arguably one of the top five greatest technical wrestlers that has ever lived. He'll never be remembered for that. He'll never be remembered for being that ring presence, that ring general that came over with the radicals, that set the world on fire, that, you know, scene where his family comes in the ring when he wins the championship, and, you know, with Eddie Guerrero, all that. I mean, there's an immeasurable amount of accolades that Chris Benoit achieved. It, none of them matter because of what happened.
Yep.
So this really awkward spot as a fan and also somebody who empathizes with another human, but it's just, I don't know. You know, when you're a kid and you know, and you think about them having an off season, it sounds like the end of days, you know, because
right.
Like, oh my God, they'll take my wrestling away. Because that's what always made wrestling the greatest thing on the planet, is it never stops. It's
right.
Always going. It's the longest weekly episodic television program ever. You know, thousands of episodes, over 1,200 episodes.
I don't think that'll ever stop.
We've seen them all, you know. We've seen every one of them.
Of course, multiple times.
But
I'm not exaggerating.
We're definitely not exaggerating. But the more that we think about it, the more that I think about it, at least, is I almost wish that there was some kind of off season for these guys where this doesn't happen, where, you know, we're not going to have to in 3, 5 years, 10 years, if we're doing this show or we're talking on the phone about wrestling or, you know, messaging each other, whatever, that we're not going to be talking about how Zack Ryder died, you know, or how Alberto Del Rio overdosed in a hotel, or how
Zack Ryder died of a broken heart recently, didn't he?
You know what I mean. Damn. but that's what I mean. Like, it actually breaks. It makes me sad. Like, as a fan and as a human being, that I wish there was something that could be done for these guys and gals.
Well, I think a lot of the stuff. And who's talking about this? I think it was Chris Jericho and Xavier Woods were talking about this. A lot of the locker room mentality is a lot different nowadays, though, than it was, even with the guys traveling as much. You know, like Chris Jericho was mentioning, he's like, it's totally different. You got all these young guys like you and Kofi, and he's like, pretty much the entire locker room is like, you guys don't party. Like, when I was coming up, you know, that's what everybody did. You got drunk, you took a couple of pills, felt good, called it a night, did it the same thing the next day. He's like, and nowadays you guys, you know, you're sitting around, you're going out to dinner, you're playing video games, and that's kind of the extent. You guys are just like hanging out, sightseeing. He's like, everything is totally different. So I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, I don't foresee any of these kind of people. I'll use Zack Ryder as the example. I don't foresee anything bad happening to guys like this outside of, you know, a freak accident or natural causes or something like that. But I don't see, you know, I don't see that aspect happening. Now, at the same time, I do believe there should be an off season because these guys just need to have their body. They need to rest, and maybe not even necessarily an off season, because Monday Night Raw is never going to stop at this point.
No, like they, I said, gone... you know what I mean. You do your Raws, you do your SmackDown tapings, and you do your one pay-per-view a month. But maybe in, you know, November and December or something like that, because January is when WrestleMania season begins. December,
right.
You know, November, we're kind of coming off of Survivor Series. You know, if they had some time to just get themselves right. But it is kind of like you said, you know, I look at somebody like Edge and I say to myself, okay, this guy, you know, the doctors looked at him and they told him, okay, you're done. It's time for you to retire. If Edge was wrestling in the 80s and into the 90s, and, you know, like 1998 rolled around. Yeah, and he had that injury. You know, he would have still been wrestling. I mean, look at Steve Austin. He his body had been functionally broken for like 3 years before the doctors finally were like, oh, hey, by the way, you should probably stop wrestling before you die. You know, before your legs don't work anymore. So it's like, I get it. I understand. I understand the logistics behind why they have to be touring year round. And I think it's great that their bodies are staying fresher for longer. You know, you look at John Cena. John Cena's turning 40 years old. I think he still looks like he's in tremendous shape. He'll still be able to go for another 4 or 5 years, I'm sure, unless he decides to, you know, kind of take a step away from that. I finally saw him in the movie Trainwreck. I think he was the funniest part of it.
He was hilarious in that movie.
He was great in that movie. But I do, you know, when you see somebody like China die, you look at the wrestlers we've lost last year and, you know, the potential for other ones to be lost down the line, it just makes me think to myself, like, man, there has to be something for these people to that's going to keep them from just falling down that rabbit hole. And we won't talk about it too much longer. I'm sorry. We'll actually start talking about the show now. But, you know, big part of our childhood. And DX, obviously, a huge part of my childhood and Danny's childhood. And a bunch of you that listen loved DX. And she was the cornerstone in there. You know, especially after Rick Rude was there one night and gone the next. All of a sudden, we need a manager who can get involved. And it was China. And there was nothing cooler than seeing her clothesline somebody on the outside of the ring when the ref's back was turned, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
So, rest in peace, China, and from those of us at Midcard All Stars Radio, just thank you for what you gave us for so long. But let's talk about Raw because this was a great show. I honestly believe this was a B plus show in a string of very good Raws since Shane McMahon has taken over. At least that's the storyline. Shane opened things up tonight and just kind of reiterated what he's been saying all along, which is we're going to be, you know, we're going to have some fun tonight. We're going to feature some people that, you know, some exciting new superstars. We're going to kind of bring things up a notch when he is interrupted by a finally returning Stephanie McMahon.
And man, the dialogue that they had was just tremendous together. But
good.
Real quick, they went too long without having Stephanie or Triple H on there. Like, they don't have to be on the show, but you, at least give the fans, like, a, you know, Triple H is in seclusion after his title, you know, after he lost the title against Roman Reigns and Stephanie's joining him or something. Like, just randomly disappeared. That ties back to, you know, how many loose ends WrestleMania left. But nonetheless, it was just Stephanie and Shane obviously play off each other very well. I mean, brother and sister. But any time Stephanie's on the microphone, it's pure gold. It really is.
Yeah. Man, they were both good.
Yeah, and she just seems to keep getting better every time she's on a mic. Like, she's becoming, and I mean this a little loosely, she's becoming like a female Paul Heyman, to where when she has a microphone, okay, shut up because I want to listen to what she's going to say.
People hate her too. Like she's so over as a heel. It's awesome. And
yeah.
I like where this went though, because, you know, she basically said like, okay, like, yeah, I get it. You're helming Raw tonight. But they announced that what we kind of have seen coming. Vince McMahon is going to announce at Payback, this was Stephanie's big reveal, that he will choose his successor as the GM for Raw. So Stephanie, very, very confident that she's going to be the one that gets chosen. Shane, not one to just kind of let that go, made sure that he said, well, tonight doesn't really matter what you think because I'm running the show. And then did the old security roll call. Those NXT wrestlers we haven't seen yet coming on out as security members. And they escorted a visibly angry Stephanie McMahon from the building to the sounds of na 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 na. Goodbye.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
You don't forget that. Come on.
I didn't want it to go too long.
I can sense a curveball coming by Vince. That it's not going to be either of them. Call me crazy. I'm sensing something else is going to happen to where I don't know if somebody like Mick Foley is going to run it. I mean, he's got to plug Mick Foley in there somehow. He's got his new show on the network.
That would be great.
But yeah,
it's not going to happen. They're going to brand split. And they're going to do the old, like, I'm choosing Shane to run Raw, you know, and she's going to be like, wah, 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 and he's going to be like, and I'm choosing Stephanie to run SmackDown. And it makes the most sense. Bringing back the brand split is going to be a fantastic way to get more superstars involved. And if they don't, like, I could see a curveball. Like, I don't think that it would be the worst idea if they just did something ludicrous. But I think with the reaction that Shane's getting, how stupid over as a face he is, and how insanely over as a heel Stephanie is, that it just creates a very, very interesting set of circumstances for what you could have in a brand split. Because the two are already very competitive. But you certainly get the storyline of Stephanie wanting to compete as heavily as possible and, you know, make SmackDown a better show. It gives them an out. Kind of like how we were saying, this is like an awesome little reset button for Raw saying, oh, and by the way, we've got, you know, Shane McMahon is going to be the GM, and he's going to think, okay, we can change things up, and this is our out to do it. So I feel like putting Stephanie McMahon over on SmackDown is a great way to say, you know, have her go over there and say, SmackDown has been struggling for a long time. This show has been, you know, sinking. It's not what it used to be, blah, blah, blah. And have her finally say, like, you know, I'm going to change things up a bit.
Yeah, kind of like a, do you remember when I ran SmackDown kind of thing?
Right.
SmackDown was thriving. That of which was actually the case, because 2003 SmackDown had probably some of the best wrestling ever in WWE.
You used to have to watch SmackDown, and there were times where SmackDown was just better than Raw. Like
a lot of times.
This was during an era where that was, where Raw was the most must-see television of the week, no matter what genre of television you're talking about. And that was only made better by SmackDown being so good that you felt like if you missed it, you were missing two more hours of Raw.
Right. Absolutely correct.
We're doing it. They're doing it. I feel it. They're bringing them back.
We're going to call it right now. Mark it down.
We're going to follow logical thinking patterns.
It's crazy how that works.
Then take credit that we decided that we discovered it. Ha-ha.
Bam.
But good opening match tonight, though, too. The thing that I like, the segment didn't go super long. This is another example of what we were kind of talking about last week, where the opening segments with Shane are 4 or 5 minutes long, and then, boom, they throw you right into a match. And this week, they threw us right into AJ Styles versus Sheamus, which I believe is their way of saying, here you go. This is AJ Styles working with a large, bulky man who can't move very well in the ring. Don't worry, guys. Payback won't be that bad, I promise.
Well, there's another large, bulky guy that's having problems with doing stuff in the ring.
But, hey, this is a good match. Like, and Sheamus, make no mistake about it, I think Sheamus is great in the ring. I think he plays a great deal. I just think he's in a very stagnant storyline right now with this League of Nations thing and kind of hope it ends very soon. It's not real cool. But
maybe the League of Nations ends up feuding with the hopefully soon to be formed other faction in the WWE.
I would rather that hopefully newly formed faction be the reason the League of Nations breaks up. But
who knows?
Good match, though. Good match for Sheamus. Sheamus came out of this match looking good. Very, very athletic contest. They let it go for a little bit too, which I thought was awesome. It's good for AJ Styles as well. You know, the reports are from this week is that Vince McMahon is actually a believer now in AJ Styles. Didn't think he was going to be over as much as he is, but apparently his merch sales are, like, in this vacuum of not having John Cena, his merch sales are just an absolute delight. You know, his hats are selling like crazy. His shirt, his theme song was like a, you know, was on the top 10 on iTunes for a while.
Yep.
You know, it makes me wish that I felt that I was a redneck so I could better identify with it. But
you don't need
none.
To be a redneck to listen to hip hop.
I don't want none. They don't want none. I mean, good match though for AJ Styles. He came out looking strong and was able to put down a beating and finish off Sheamus. I really like the finish to this. I like Sheamus going for the bro kick and missing and having his leg sort of a guillotine over
caught
the top rope.
There. Yeah.
Exactly. And then finished with a phenomenal forearm, which I'm actually coming around to that as a finisher because it looks sweet and the delivery is always awesome on it.
The way he can torch his body in the air gives it that appeal where you're like, oh, wow, this is a big move.
It is, always looks good. And this was a great way to open the show. Crowd was hot for AJ. And they very, very cleverly, when AJ was leaving the ring, had the Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows come out, you know, give AJ some props on his victory and then make their, their way. Or sorry, you know, so I just have this up. I just had a moment where I amalgamated two. But then, you know, so they come out, they clap, and then I forgot that there was a segment in between because Enzo Amore was a part of it, so I probably should remember better.
He's so good. I can't wait for an Enzo Amore and a New Day square off on the mic. I really can't.
It's coming. But this was also a good thing for the vaudevillains too. They got to come out a little bit, and you got to see a little bit of Aiden English work the mic, which Aiden English is actually a pretty good mic worker. And I thought that it was a good little segment. But of course, what overshadowed everything is just how stupid over Enzo and Cass are. It's not even close. They probably got one of the biggest pops of the entire night.
Yeah, it's really not fair to the other guys, how over they are. And here's the best part is Enzo Amore is not that great of a wrestler, but he's only wrestled like 100 matches in his entire life. So he's going to get nothing but better.
Like, I don't think he's bad.
He's not bad, but but look at it though, for wrestling pretty much never, your entire life up until a couple of years ago, he's doing a pretty damn good job.
Yeah, Smack Talker Skywalker, not too shabby.
Mike Saber for a hater.
I love it. But they came out, they had a great little segment. Vaudevillains look good. That's important look going forward as well. I really, really hope that these NXT tag teams do something meaningful. I would love to see Enzo and Cass be the successor to the New Day, give New Day somebody to chase, make the division seem like it's more competitive than it actually is. I think we're going in the right direction. Lots of good tag teams in there right now. New Day's great. Cass and Enzo are great. Vaudevillains are great. Usos are a tag team. Looks like the Colognes are coming up. Greens from Puerto Rico.
What is it going to be? These poor guys.
I have no clue. Nobody knows what they're going to be. Who knows?
How many times can you repackage somebody? Not even really change their looks.
If they're going to be a 3-0, then maybe, you know, I don't know, man. You know, maybe the Colognes, you know, you get Carlito and all that.
If they're another three-man group, that'd be cool. No pun intended.
Jeez. We could have something real special here. The Colognes versus the New Day. It's going to be the Nation of Domination versus Los Pariquas, part two. I'm excited.
And on that note, folks, cutting it short tonight.
We're calling him Savio Vega.
I have his email address. Let me see.
Savio. So we got this. So anyhow, I think the segue should have been Usos versus you know, Gallows and Anderson a little bit sooner. But this was a good statement match for Anderson and Gallows, who just laid the absolute hurting down, destroyed the Usos, picked them apart. It was just great. Very, very excellent introductory match. But it was like you said, the crowd kind of had no clue what they should be doing.
And I liked that. I liked it in the sense that, okay, these guys are advertised as heels. However, they're not cheating. They're just beating down their opponent. And I liked that. I really, like, it was like a clean heel. Like, when was the last time a heel got a clean victory? You know, we talk about this all the time. Heels are nothing but cheap heat and cheating to win. But this, there was, I mean, yeah, they beat them down at the end of the match. But during the match itself, there was nothing. Like, there was no, it was great. I liked it. I liked that the crowd was just, they were silent, except for the few Bullet Club chants. But they weren't silent in a bad way. Because when they're silent in a bad way and not enjoying it, that's when they start chanting stupid crap to get themselves over.
Right. I did like that quite a bit. And I think the problem is that the fans – well, you know, it's not a problem. It's a good thing. The fans want – they like good wrestlers. And that's what Anderson and Gallows are. And that's what they're being advertised as well. They're being advertised as good wrestlers. They're being advertised as, you know, a former multiple-time IGPW champions. They're a part of a stable that is extremely popular outside of WWE, the Bullet Club. They have a cool name. They have a cool image. They have a cool hand sign. They encompass AJ Styles and Finn Balor. A whole litany of awesome superstars. So the crowd, while they're being packaged as heels and they're attacking Roman Reigns, and we're supposed to be like, oh, you know, I don't really like them. They're interested. And they're interested in the kind of way you'd be interested in faces. Like the way that people were interested in another faction whose colors were black and white and you didn't know the allegiance of a third member right away. There's a lot of interesting things going on here. But Anderson and Gallows lay the beat down on the Usos. They continue after the bell. Roman comes in, makes the save. But it's like he makes the face save where he just clears the ring, you know? And I don't mind that.
To a rain of boos.
Not just boos. I messaged Danny while the show's going on. And I said that Reigns is over in the worst way possible. Not like where they're booing him because he's over as like such a good heel, or they're cheering him because he's such a good face. Like, they're legitimately booing him because they hate him.
Yeah.
Like, they're not booing him because they're like, hey, this guy is such a good heel. Like, he is. We hate him. He's doing a great job. They're booing him because they genuinely hate him.
And they need to do something about that before it's too late.
I don't know what they can do. I mean, it's funny because, like, I don't know what's going to happen with that. It's like, okay, if they ever do turn Reigns heel, the audience is going to be happy that they turn him heel, and then they're going to cheer. So, like, who knows what the hell they're going to do with it. At this point, they've gone way too far down the rabbit hole with it, and I don't know how they can possibly have this be advantageous for the product.
I don't know. Maybe with Cena returning on Memorial Day.
Yeah, that's
fair. They do something with that. I mean, have Cena come back and challenge Roman Reigns. Hopefully not for the title. But, I mean, who knows?
I'll take him being the title holder. I don't care.
Well, no, I'm fine with that. But I would just, for the bigger picture, I really think that AJ Styles should win at Payback.
I hope he does. I think that would be the best thing for the bigger picture. So next up, we got a little Sami Zayn versus Machka and, with Lana ringside.
Yeah. Lana.
You see how she enters the ring now when she's wrestling?
Yep.
That concludes our Mid-Card All-Stars Radio. Goodbye.
How would you rate her entrance compared to somebody like Melina's entrance?
Solid 10. solid 6. Like if the scale went higher than 10, I would just...
Do you think she has a better entrance than Melina did?
She has a much better entrance than anybody does.
I don't know. Melina's entrance is pretty... Before they went all PG, and they had the guy in the back, the camera guy, always in the right place at the right time. How convenient.
I don't know. I'm going to need some time to think about it. But I like this match for both parties involved. Rusev still looked awesome, still looked very powerful in the ring, which is a nice sort of departure from how he's been the last few weeks, sort of been more like a stooge. But I like this. And Zayn got the face win. He got the roll up in the 1-2-3. So Rusev doesn't go and look bad, and he doesn't look weak. And Sami Zayn gets the face victory and gets jumped by KO after the match, which is perfect. This is what you need. Like, you're showing the vignette before that shows Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens talking about how they were brothers and they traveled the road for 14 years together and they maintained such a close friendship and they grew together and felt like each other was family, and eventually that fractured. There's that real tension. And it was a good ending because Kevin Owens got the heel, beat down on the face. And it's really setting the stage for this match at Payback, which it's great because I felt like we went into WrestleMania with very little like storytelling behind what was happening. Whereas this episode of Payback has like significantly more story building behind it than anything that we're used to the last few pay-per-views.
I love the vignette. I thought that immediately upon watching it, the first thought that came to my head was, this is exactly how they should have done the Bellas.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was done wonderfully. I mean, you were hooked. It made it so, it made it, because A, it's real. But then, you have Kevin Owens at the end, trolling kind of again. I'm not the bad guy. I'm the victim in this. Like everything was done perfectly. Like I would really like to try and hear Vince Russo try to pick this apart tomorrow and talk about the pre-tapes of war. They were awful. The pre-tapes. I used to do 45 pre-tapes per show. Like I would like to try and hear him pick that one apart, because in my opinion, you could not pick that apart. Because you couldn't ask for any more than what you got.
They're going to really sell this with the match too. I think that's the big part. Like the tension behind it is huge. The storyline behind it is huge. But just having these two in the ring, and you got a small taste of it at the Royal Rumble. You got a small taste of it at WrestleMania. But now you're going to get the main course. You're going to get these two guys. They're going to go for 10, 15 minutes. They're going to let them take the gloves off.
Oh, yeah.
And just go nuts. And yep. I think that is something that is probably... outside of, I think that's going to be the match of the card. I think they're going to steal the show. And I think they're going to walk behind that curtain and they're going to look at everybody like, okay, good luck.
Yeah.
I don't see how you can top us what we just did. So good luck. That's the end of the ball game for you.
They'll come back behind the curtain to a standing ovation.
I think they will. I really do think they will. And moving on from them, we got another indie darling, Smiling Black Man, one of my favorite wrestlers right now. That's what he is. What else is he?
Yeah. No, my reaction is because he's now stuck in a program with Cody Rhodes.
He's Ricky Ortiz.
They don't do anything with.
Remember Ricky Ortiz? Big smiles. Hey everybody, what's going on?
Yeah, but then he got married and knocked up Layla.
God,
so he won.
Ricky Ortiz is the world. You're the real champion, Ricky Ortiz. But this was Stardust versus Apollo. This had a nice, interesting start to it where he was interrupted. His little backstage interview with Renee Young was interrupted by Stardust. Stardust came over to him and he goes, hey, Cody, I was wanting to find you. I wanted to thank you, tell you how much your father meant to me. Your father's the one that picked my name. And Stardust just delivers another batshit crazy promo, which he's amazing at. Cody Rhodes could sell ketchup popsicles to a woman in white gloves. It doesn't matter what gimmick they strap him to. He's still always gold with it. But I do like how he kind of like, anytime somebody calls him Cody, he always looks at him like, I'm not Cody.
I love the little cat hiss that he does too.
It's sweet. But this match is over pretty quick. Apollo picking up the win with the spinning sit-down powerbomb, which is a pretty sweet finisher. I like it a lot more than his standing flip splash that he does.
I think that's just for added effect.
Yeah, I mean, when you watched Breaking Ground, they were talking about that specifically. You know, Triple H said, listen, we need you to have a finisher that has more impact, that showcases your power. So I think it's a good switch. And I like Apollo Crews. I mean, I don't know why. It's weird.
No, it's not weird. He's good.
I'm just waiting for him to end a promo with, and that is a good thing. Like, that's what I'm just waiting for. Like,
you know what's funny is, so during right before his match started, after the promo match started, I had to run to the bathroom, and I looked at Roxy and I was like, I'll be right back. And I looked at Apollo Crews and I was like, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Hand to God, I said that. And then you go and say it. See, this is why we can mate right for the WWE.
We work together as a team, and it's great.
That's right.
God bless. To go from that to a promo jockey between Chris Jericho and Dean Ambrose, two of the best in the game right now, and they verbally dissected each other. It was a great promo because it showed off Jericho's heel chops are still completely intact. Ambrose is still a live wire, still like borderline psychotic, and went for the beatdown on Jericho. Didn't quite work out so well because Chris Jericho managed to put a Walls of Jericho on him on the Spanish announce table.
Yeah. I thought the promo was great. I loved it. I just like how it went back and forth, and you know, we were all kind of worried about Dean Ambrose because he lost to Lesnar, and you're like, okay, well, what's next for him? And you're like, oh crap, now he's just gonna be stuck hosting a stupid television show now. But that wasn't really the case. Yeah.
One of the funniest things to come out of this, by the way, was that Paige tweeted at Chris Jericho saying that putting people in submissions on the announce table is my gimmick, to which Chris Jericho replied, please, child, go back and watch the greatest match in WWE Raw history, 5/21/2001. That was my 15th birthday, by the way, when I tore Triple H's quad on that table. Chris Jericho is the
I'm
greatest.
I'm not very – yeah, but he's not the greatest Twitter troll. That would be Kevin Owens by
Kevin
far.
Owens is great. But that was my 15th birthday, and I always remember that when I came home and I actually got to just sit there and watch that.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. It was, my parents were like, it's your birthday, you can stay up and watch Raw. My parents used to kick my ass when I was a kid, so I did well in school. sorry guys, wrestling was more important. But it was definitely a nice reminder for how good both of those guys can be at their job. And we got to segue right into Natalia versus Emma, who looks great in this match, looks like a very viable heel, and then she got put into a sharpshooter and she tapped out. So that was good. Thanks, Emma, for coming back.
Yeah, I don't get that part. Is it because she's dating Zack Ryder?
Emma a little bit. Oh, definitely. I wish they would have just built her a little bit, gave Emma, like, you know, Alicia Fox, and then gave Emma, you know, like a couple of, like, Cameron or somebody like that, like brought up a couple divas that have some, you know, a little bit of name recognition, but you could buy Emma beating. It just doesn't make sense for the like, oh, Emma, you know, returning to Raw with this new hostile, aggressive attitude, doing great things on NXT, and 3 minute sharpshooter. She's done. Good night. You can hear
what,
me.
What? Well, and you heard the chants during the match as well. Where what are they doing with her? What are they doing with Sasha?
I don't know. It was weird too because there was no, like, there was very okay. So Charlotte was on for a few minutes tonight. Charlotte was she did commentary during this match, but there was no Becky Lynch, and no Sasha tonight. But during the Divas match, what were they chanting? We want Sasha. We want Sasha. We want Sasha. So kind of peculiar that we haven't been able to see Sasha Banks when it's very clear she is the single most over superstar
person
on the Divas roster. So I don't know. I think I heard what the plans were that Natalia is going to be feuding Charlotte all the way up through the next pay-per-view. So not Payback, but whatever comes after that.
And I'm fine with that, but you can still, you can have more than one program. You know what I mean? Like you can have more than one women's program. They don't need to be feuding over the title just to get television time.
Yeah. But this is also why I think I am very happy if we do get to see something like, you know, a brand split on SmackDown and Raw, because it'd be nice to see, you know, okay, so, you know, what's her name? Natty and Charlotte, they're headlining Raw. Becky and Sasha, they're headlining over on SmackDown. You're not intermingling the two. You're exposing the audience to two different, you know, groups. Maybe
mm-hmm.
something like that. But I think one thing that is very important to note about tonight is that we got a Damian Sandow sighting for all of 8 seconds.
Yeah, poor guy.
He waved in the ring.
Talent.
He waved in the ring, so that was big. He got a wave off, and
right.
everybody loves Damian Sandow. He waved. Crowd's going nuts. Who's he wrestling against? Oh shit, Baron Corbin. All right, well he's clearly gonna lose. That sucks. Okay, nope, just kidding. Dolph Ziggler comes out and, you know, throws a beatdown on Baron Corbin, and okay, so Damian did not get pinned. In my book, that equals Damian Sandow has defeated Baron Corbin on Monday Night Raw.
Damian doesn't get pinned, therefore Damian has won.
One person was in that ring with his arms raised, waving to a crowd. The other one wasn't. So I think that means that he won.
Right.
Congratulations, Damian Sandow. You fought hard. You deserved it. I can't wait to see you be a TNA World Heavyweight Champion. You're going to be great at it. If TNA's still around, which they're probably not. Earlier, I made a comment that if your only way you can achieve sexual arousal was by watching wrestling botches, then TNA is better than Pornhub.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, why do you need Pornhub when you can just watch wrestlers fall over constantly?
Yeah.
And trip over things.
I agree.
You still need it. So after Damian successfully defeated Baron Corbin 1-2-3, and then had his hand raised and he waved to the crowd. We got The Miz and Cesaro saying a couple things to each other. Maurice was in the ring, so I wasn't really paying much attention to anything anybody else was doing. I think Miz did a bad De Niro impression.
Is she not hotter than she used to be?
She is, yeah. She is.
How is that possible?
The Miz is one of the stars. Like, I should reach. Like, I remember watching him on The Real World when he was like a drunk frat boy that was like, bro, I want to be a wrestler. And then he became a wrestler. And then he became a world heavyweight champion. And then he headlined like a WrestleMania. Then he was in a movie. Then he married Maurice.
Yeah. He's done like nine movies.
Like, don't let anybody tell you. You can't do what you want to do. Because The Miz did it. He did it real good.
Yeah.
Now he goes to home to Maurice every night.
Yes, he does.
Bitch. But him and Cesaro have a good little jockey back and forth. I would have liked to see a little bit more from Cesaro. I think that they're trying to get him over verbally with the WWE Universe a little bit.
Correct, yeah.
You know, reports are saying that Vince is actually now behind Cesaro, and after whatever happens with Miz at Payback,
they expect sort of a big push for him. So that could lead to him either winning the championship or taking it at the next pay-per-view, kind of to legitimize Miz a bit and have him have a couple months with that belt. But this was a good promo, and it was good for Miz. Obviously, it's always good, but Miz promo is never bad. And Cesaro goes for the swing. Maryse dives on top of her husband. I think that this actually had a nice little ring to it, and I'm excited to see where this goes because I would love to see something special happen with Cesaro.
Yeah, I was very impressed with like you said, Miz is always good on the mic. I was very impressed with Cesaro on the mic.
Yeah, not bad.
I would say the mic work in total tonight was much better than it's been in a long time. I thought every promo had a point. They stuck to it. It was almost like it wasn't scripted tonight. Like they were just letting the guys. But you know what I mean? Like it was almost like they were letting the guys just be their own characters.
I think the worst part about this show tonight, oddly enough, was the main event. I thought it was well worked. Actually, I thought it was a good match. It was Alberto Del Rio versus Roman Reigns. The reason I didn't like this match very much is because there's no history. This was just two guys against each other. Whereas Raw's in the past, you know, that was a big thing with the Attitude Era. Every main event meant something. It had something to do with, you know, the storyline that was going on right now. There was really nothing for this. It was just Roman Reigns versus Alberto Del Rio. Good match, though.
Mm-hmm.
Very good match. Del Rio almost gets a three count on Reigns whenever Anderson and Gallows come out. But Roman, you know, averts, you know, disaster averted, no problem. And it didn't mean anything to me. I think the big part of it was that afterwards, Gallows and Anderson came down wanting to, you know, to beat down Reigns. AJ came out there. He stops them. So you're like, oh, that's a big deal. Like he, you know, he stops them. Reigns throws a Superman punch at AJ, takes AJ out of the picture for a moment, and then starts to clean house against Anderson and Gallows, to which AJ rewards him with a phenomenal elbow. And now you're in that ambiguous sort of state where you could see how AJ could be like, listen, I tried to save you. You know, you threw a fist at me, man. Now I'm siding with my boys 100%. So, interesting going into this. It just sets up a very, very weird circumstance where if, and I'm using the air quotes, if AJ does go heel on Roman Reigns, he's still going to be way too over to be a heel. He's going to be the face, and Roman is still going to be booed maliciously out of the building.
Right. And that's the awkward predicament they put themselves in, where they should and maybe AJ Styles is actually, and it's going to sound odd, but maybe he's the perfect guy to help Roman Reigns turn heel.
Yep.
Like, in some weird and twisted way, AJ Styles actually could help Roman Reigns make the push into being a heel. Who knows?
No, I mean, it's a good point. It's a good point. Just because he's so over as a face, it just makes sense that you could use him to get Roman into that heel mode. But what do you do with the Bullet Club? Like, that's what's confusing to me. Like, I think that they're just gonna have that NWO feel to them where the fans are going to cheer them because they're new, they're different, they're badasses, and they're cool, and they're fun. And Roman is going to be sort of left on the outside looking in like he has been for the last few months. But overall, it was a good Raw. I liked it. Like I said, good B-plus show, solid payback go-home program. So before we go, Danny, tell them where they can find us.
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, everything is at Midcard All Stars, guys.
iTunes.
Everywhere. iTunes. Yep.
That's a big one. Give Spotify. Us some 5-star ratings. We appreciate it. Get us on
That's
your
right.
Your downloads. And make sure that no matter what you do, you always stay fanatics. Thank you for your time tonight. Good night.